Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are going to talk to our terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul University. Tom Mikitas joins us this morning. Tom, we're here to talk about the New Zealand terrorist attack. And also this morning in the Netherlands, more terror. Not the United States this time. Is that an unusual thing?
Not at all. As far as the Netherlands go, I lived there in 2004. I was teaching at the military academy, and they have a problem both with far-right extremism. It has not yet been quite so violent, and they also have a fairly disgruntled, ghettoized Muslim population, a number of high-profile assassinations, Pim Fortuyn, Theo van Gogh, and so on. So it's too early to tell what this is. But, you know, what all these things are now, because of the internet and social media, all of these phenomena, whether on the right or the left or, you know, whether religiously or sexually motivated, are in fact international.
Tom, talk about the idea of committing an act of terrorism in a house of worship. What's the thought process there exactly?
Well, the thought process is an individual who, over a period of time, has divided the world into them and us. And for him, and this is more than the people in Australia and New Zealand want to admit, that there is an anti-immigrant, you know, feeling in those countries as well. They identify this group as a threat to them. And the guy's manifesto is quite interesting. He says he has no problem with Muslims as long as they stay in Muslim countries. He has problems with them coming to his country as he sees it, even though he's not a New Zealander. But this ability to just simply take the thing that most identifies the other that you hate and make it your target in an effort to provoke a more extensive conflict.
And what about his mention of Donald Trump?
Yeah, that's a very interesting kind of thing, and I think it says something. He says, in fact, that the president is a symbol of renewed white pride and identity, but he doesn't like him as a leader. That shows us that a lot, this is the most pernicious thing that hasn't been much talked about, the way in which these white nationalist ideas have been legitimized and become part of mainstream politics, not by using offensive language, but they've been repackaged very skillfully as white pride, celebrating your European heritage, don't apologize for being male. There's a lot of misogyny in here. Christianity is under threat. All of these things are a grievance narrative. They're not borne out by any evidence, but they're extremely powerful. And it's wrong to say that the president's supporters all hold these views. That's not true. But there is a significant core of his base that share these ideas. Now, they're not violent, but they give cover for these people. And when the president is signing his veto saying we're facing an invasion and is using the same sort of language as this person in New Zealand, that's what's disturbing.
Tom, in no way, shape, or form am I blaming President Trump for what took place, but it's interesting to me that he is spending more time saying to the media, good luck proving that I had any involvement in it, than he is denouncing the man who wrote those words.
That's exactly the point. I think that's what's drawn so much attention. The same thing with the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, where he says, well, there are good people on both sides. Yeah. That simply is not an acceptable way to frame these issues. But again, he makes things about himself. I mean, that's clearly the case, but the idea is this refusal, because he wants to say, oh, these are isolated, disturbed individuals. That's how this is playing out. Is it a lone wolf, which is what he wants to say, disturbed guy who would have done something anyway, or is it an international movement? The truth is it's probably both. But, you know, when you are a mainstream politician and you touch into these raw nerves of fear and you stimulate them, you do bear an indirect responsibility. But it's ridiculous to say he himself is responsible for this.
Sure.
But it's a reminder that words have the power to kill. And it's a call to say, you really got to think about what you say, because you're not just anybody. You're the leader of the free world.
What about this live streaming the massacre? I know that it got out there. Facebook tried to take it down. Various social media sites tried to take it down. But then other people were still able to go behind the scenes and find it somehow. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, it's part of the new normal in a sad sort of way, is that once something is posted, and I don't profess to be an expert on the technical aspects of this, in fact, what they talk about it going viral is that others get a hold of it, they can repost it, they can put it in all kinds of places, and you can probably find it on the dark net as well, a site like Reddit, for example. But it shows you there is a very much an egocentric dimension to this. This individual is gloating over what he does. He wants to put it out there as an illustration. And he was very motivated by two other mass shooters, Anders Breivik in Norway and Dylan Roof in Charleston, South Carolina, with the African-American Methodist Church that he went and shot 9 people. And he identifies those people by name in his manifesto.
That's scary.
It's extremely scary. He names the commentator, Owen. I've forgotten her first name, but as somebody else,
who Candace Owen.
Candace Owen, thank you. Yeah, exactly right. He says, more than anybody else, she was the one who kind of got him thinking these ways. See, that's the thing too. The mainstream commentary. Root went to a site called Conservative Citizens Council. If you take a look at it, you're going to see relatively mild language. And these people are not formally members of these groups, so the groups can quite legitimately say, oh, we never told them to do that. We disavow violence. Strangely, they sometimes have anti-discrimination sites. For my new book, I spent a lot of time kind of wading through the sewer of the internet, reading this stuff, and you realize how skillful they are, that they avoid the kind of thing that's going to get their site taken down, and they themselves never get their hands dirty with violence. But it's hard to believe they're unaware of the kind of, that there are people out there who are unstable that they might very well inspire.
So, Tom, once they determine who the terrorist is, the shooter is, mm-hmm. their next move is to figure out any affiliations, correct?
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead. In this case, that's where the lone wolf piece comes in. It's very unlikely you're going to find formal membership. What you will almost certainly find is his presence on some of the websites. There's an article someone has done, saying that one of the warning signs is if you go to a site like Stormfront, which is kind of a gathering place for all these extremists, is that there will be an uptick in their online postings before they actually strike. And the language will become more, strident and so on. But the problem we're having today is so many of them, they've learned so much from the past that their sites are often password protected. You can't really get into the war stuff. The surface is enough to alarm you and to indicate what's below. But they themselves, are pretty good at putting some distance between what they do, what they say or what they allow and what people who follow them actually do.
And who's patrolling those sites from the good guy angle? Is that the FBI who's covering that? Is it Homeland Security who's covering that?
It's probably both, and I don't have inside information. I have no security clearance, so I can't tell you. And it's obviously in the best interests of law enforcement to not publicize their capabilities or where they are.
Okay.
That's one of the arguments, ironically, against shutting down the sites. First of all, it's an exercise in futility. Second of all, if they're somewhat open, you can watch them and follow them. But when you look at the literally thousands of people, I mean, there are over 1,000 hate groups the Southern Poverty Law Center has, in fact, identified. It's just extremely difficult to pick people out, which is why in the work I do, and people are doing all over the world, we're focusing more and more on trying to develop some kind of a profile, a set of behavioral characteristics that would identify people who are likely to snap.
With that many hate groups, you just said in excess of 1,000 hate groups, it's in our best interest to keep those hate groups separate, right? We don't want them banding together in any way or shape or form, right?
Well, the truth is that there is an awful lot of cross-pollinization. The thing I concluded in this piece, in this book I just wrote, is that these people are equal opportunity haters.
Yes, hate is the common theme.
Yeah, exactly. And even some of them that poses quite legitimate, like, Act for America proposes to be a security-based patriotic organization, and it has some claim to doing that. But it's pretty anti-Islamic. Now, there's an anti-discrimination statement on their page, but if you start looking at the individual posts, you start seeing that a lot of other people who have other racist, anti-Semitic, and misogynist views views are going to cross over there. And that's what you're going to find everywhere, you know, is that, that there's, and that's really hard to measure, is that the danger doesn't come from registered members of these groups. What it comes from is the fellow travelers. James Field, down in Charlottesville, was identified with, he had a Vanguard America shield, which is another white nationalist group. And they said, but he wasn't a member. A lot of people, we gave our shields out to a lot of people, and a lot of people were wearing the shirts we were wearing. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty disingenuous as denials go, but it also keeps them from any legal responsibility.
We're talking to Tom Mikitas, professor of history at DePaul University. The new book that Tom alluded to is Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. It is not available yet, but it is orderable on Amazon.com. It comes out in June. A great read, Violent Extremists, from Tom Mikitas. We'll pick this up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with Tom Mikitas, professor of history at DePaul University, terrorism expert. We're talking about what went down in New Zealand, the terrorist attack. We talk about the hate out there. I know I'm very naive about this, but a 28-year-old, you just don't know how that hate builds up so much. How does this happen?
That's where the lone wolf piece comes in. I mean, we set up a false dichotomy as one or the other. If you dig into the lives of these individuals, and I've looked at a large number of them, they're not like the traditional lone wolf, Ted Kaczynski, arguably diagnosably mental ill, but they often, mentally ill, they often show signs of significant social dysfunction. And there's often this incredible marrying together of a personal grievance narrative with this larger one. You know, we all have things going wrong in our life, and it becomes very attractive if things are not going well, whether it's in your personal life, your job life, your whatever it is, to say all of my problems would go away if it weren't for this particular group. And it's a radicalization is an individual process, but there are certainly things we identify. And I'm pretty certain that as they start looking into this young man's background, they're going to find some of that. Dylan Roof, your parents split up. Not that that automatically makes you anything, but they moved him around a lot. There were a lot of things that were very disruptive, and there were even some warning signs. And that's what we're trying to focus on, is how to get people, teachers, family members, et cetera, focused on identifying behaviors. There's already some evidence that this guy's gun club in New Zealand, that one individual called in and said, I'm a little concerned about what I'm hearing among some of these individuals here, addressing in fatigues. There's an alarming thing here. We'll learn more. We don't know if it's anything, but the internet is this wonderful way of validating these beliefs. At the same time, it isolates you from normal society. You know, you can say, this is my real community online. Of course, everybody around me doesn't get it, so I'll just go here for validation. And the more you distance yourself from interaction with the people you hate, the easier it is to persuade yourself anything about them that you want to believe.
Okay, so you mentioned Reddit and other various places on the web where you can hook up with these groups, these hate groups. I can only imagine that there are people out there that are trying to infiltrate these hate groups as...
Yeah.
You know, that they're FBI agents or Homeland Security and they're pretending to be a part of this hate. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's going on, isn't it? If other people can join the groups, why can't the good guys join the groups?
I think they probably are, and you don't hear about it. It's, you know, when it comes to the FBI or Homeland Security, the only time they get any publicity is when something doesn't go right.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this will come up even with terrorist groups. You know, some of the attacks that'll occur, it'll come out, oh, the police, this person was known to the police. But, you know, it takes like 8 people to surveil a single person 24 hours a day. So just because somebody, and the other thing is we have to be careful what we call the conveyor belt profiling, where somebody shows this particular sign and they automatically are going to pick up a gun and go shoot people. It's really hard to sort it out, which is, I think, more and more what we want to push it on to is the ordinary family member, co-worker, associate who will often spot the aberrant behavior, you know, because there are personal warning signs. But most of us, when we see a person who's often paranoid, which is another piece of it, our way of dealing with it is to push them away. You know, just go away. We don't want you here, you know, etc. And that just makes them more isolated and more prone to go off.
But the difficulty there, Tom, is the obvious. You certainly don't want to turn in a loved one. You're always apprehensive
right.
of turning somebody
That's
in.
Right.
And who amongst us doesn't work with somebody that you have some doubts about? You just don't know what to do with that information, you know?
Yeah. Actually, the interesting thing there is, for one thing, in terms of if we're going to get support, we have to shift from, retributive justice to restorative justice. What I mean by that is you're absolutely right. No parent's going to turn in a kid. And we're all very, very good at denial. Anytime a family member comes out and is identified as an alcoholic, you know, often the family members have to get help. And they go, boy, I had no idea. I missed all these signs and all this stuff. But the thing is, the model there is we're not going to lock you up. We're not going to punish you. We're going to get you help. And if that's the approach we take, and we've started to do it with some Islamist radicalization, the young man out of Bolingbrook, they didn't throw him in jail. They said, look, you know what? You need, we're going to monitor you. We're going to have, you know, we're going to check on you, but we're going to approach this as a problem, not as criminality. So, you know, it is hard. And as far as ordinary people you find odd in the workplace, sometimes just, you know, moving toward engaging and, you know, not avoiding them, strangely enough, grounds them. And they often, because a lot of times there's a craving of attention. All of this is, you know, is tentative because we're still really struggling to figure out how this works. And that's why we get this terrible mixture of this personal problem with this larger, you know, ideological movement.
And the terrorism in the Netherlands reported today, at this point, it's no copycat or anything that you're thinking of. It's just, it seems weird that worldwide press on the New Zealand terrorist attack, and now...
Yeah. Well, it can be a copycat. We just don't know enough about it yet. There's something that people talk about in the field called the psych ward effect. If one person in a ward starts to become really agitated, it will affect all the others. So when you get this thing going out there, there is no question that it's a worry, which is why we stepped up security at mosques around the United States after this, just as we stepped up security at synagogues after the Tree of Life shooting. But this, unfortunately, if there are people out there, boy, you know, I can get some attention for myself, or I can strike a blow for the cause, etc. It is a worry.
So even though,
no, in the case of Netherlands, yeah.
Tom, even though the initial attack took place half a globe away, here in the United States, we're still sensitive to that, and we still act on it yep. quickly, right?
You have to, because we live in a tightly integrated, interconnected world. And this individual referenced so much in the United States, including even our gun laws. So there is a global movement here. We can't, part of the problem I have with people saying, oh, it's just a few deranged individuals, they're just lone wolves, is that's an effort to deny that there is something larger going on here. And we have to approach both problems. The other issue is, oh, we need more mental health. That's absolutely true. Ironically, the same people who say that cut funding for it. But that alone isn't going to do it. This is a multifaceted, multidimensional problem.
Tom Mikaitis' new book is called Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. It's not available yet. It's orderable on Amazon.com, and it'll come your way in June. Tom, thanks for talking to us. Really appreciate it, as always.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom Mikaitis. Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.